Akerbilk, who died a few weeks ago, playing the piece that he always referred to as his pension, Stranger on the Shore. It's goodbye now from me, Alan Shipton. I'll be back at the same time next week. But here's Julian Joseph with Jazz Lineup.
The sound of drummer of the moment, Ollie Howell and his band, recorded at this month's London Jazz Festival, who feature as part of tonight's special concert set. Plus, I'll be marking the birthday of one of the giants of British jazz, saxophonist Tony Coe, who turns 80 this very day. And I'll be in the company of Kevin Legendre as part of this month's Now's the Time, with the 1987 album Somewhere Called Home. It's a brilliant example of Tony Coe's skill as an accompanist and soloist within an intimate and small group setting. This is one of singer Norma Winston's early ECM recordings, but its success hinges on the precise, expressive interplay between her voice, Coe's clarinet and saxophone, and John Taylor's piano. The material is adventurous, and the performance by these three giants of British jazz has a deft poetic finesse.
A song of love is a song of woe. Don't ask me how I know. A song.
And let's keep the birthday celebrations going with Tony in mind. The band is that of Belgian pianist Francie Boland and the US drummer Kenny Clark, and also the Ellington bassist Jimmy Woody. Featured here playing tenor saxophone on a gentle piece called Gloria is Tony Coe. From all of us here at Jazz Lineup, a very happy birthday to you, Tony.
Thank you.
Tony Coe with the Clark Boland Big Band and Glorious Theme, and a version from the album All Smiles. And more from Tony later on the show as we celebrate the British Reeds legend's 80th birthday today. Coming up next, tonight's concert set highlights from drummer Ollie Howell, who's famously been mentored by Quincy Jones and can boast having jazz legend Jimmy Cobb, the drummer on Miles Davis's classic Kind of Blue, as a fan. Ollie makes confident music, which is no small feat, as he overcame great odds when diagnosed with a brain malformation. Having to undergo surgery, he used his time in hospital as an opportunity to write new music, which became the repertoire for his debut album Sutures and Stitches. Jazz Lineup recorded Ollie at this month's London Jazz Festival, and the lineup features Max Luthert on double bass, Matt Robinson on piano, Duncan Eagles on the tenor saxophone, Mark Perry on trumpet, and Ollie Howell on drums. And Ollie and the band open up with New.
Thank you ever so much. That was a track from our first album, which is called Sutures and Stitches. And the story behind that album is that in 2009, when I was studying at music college, I got very suddenly diagnosed with a brain malformation, and I had to go and have neurosurgery very suddenly and take lots of time out. But luckily, several months before my diagnosis, I was introduced to the amazing Mr. Quincy Jones, who has since become such an important person and friend and mentor in my life. And from meeting him just before going through all that, gave me huge inspiration and motivation to go and write my own music and start my own project and really find out what I have to say as a musician myself. So I would sit in my hospital bed with various scraps of manuscript paper and a Sibelius on my computer writing out things. And I sort of came out the other side and had this collection of music. So I got some of my best friends together and we made an album. And we really loved playing it. So that was the story behind Sutures and Stitches. Thank you very much. That was a track called Beyond from there. We're going to continue now with another new one. This one is called Resurge. Thank you.
Drummer Ollie Howell and his band recorded at this year's London Jazz Festival on the Jazz Lineup stage at the South Bank Centre's Claw Ballroom on November the 15th. Featuring Max Luthard on double bass, Matt Robinson on piano, Duncan Eagles on tenor saxophone, Mark Perry on the trumpet, and Ollie Howell on the drums. And for more information on Ollie and for the tracks featured on tonight's programme, check out the links on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. And Jazz Lineup will have more highlights from the London Jazz Festival over the coming weeks. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph, on FM, online and on digital radio. Next up, let's continue our celebrations marking Tony Coe's 80th birthday, which is today. I'm joined by Kevin Legendre for this month's Now's the Time, and he has picked a special album featuring Tony Coe. Hi Kevin, tell us about this album that you've chosen and why you think it's such an important piece of work.
So it is Norma Winston's Somewhere Called Home, released in 1987 on ECM Records. Mm-hmm. It's a really important piece of work because it's a great example of jazz as intimacy and conversation. So it's Norma Winston singing, John Taylor playing piano, and Tony Coe on tenor saxophone and clarinet. And you really hear how the three of them are listening to each other intently and using space and using sometimes very simple techniques for doubling each other's lines, reharmonizing certain lines, just in a very, very imaginative way to make this a very expressive album where you don't want to hear bass or drums or anything else because the three of them are just so complete together.
That is the magic, isn't it? That it sounds complete. As an ensemble, they really work. And I'd go further and say that they all seem to be able to be themselves and work in perfect sympathy.
There's something about the purity of the sound of this record. It's really, really beautifully recorded. You hear everything very clearly. This kind of clarity of the instruments, the clarity of the lines. There's something about the way that Tony Coe's clarinet it just kind of pierces through the mix, which I think is really important, because the clarinet, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the great instruments in jazz. And certainly in the 80s, it wasn't particularly fashionable. You didn't hear it being played that much. And I think he really makes a great case for it as something which is as expressive as an alto, tenor, or soprano. He does play tenor on this album as well, but all the tracks that I've chosen are the clarinet pieces, because he just brings so much beautiful colour to the instrument. Some of the lines that he plays on this record are not expansive, so the moments of magic are in the short phrases, I think, and some of those little gurgles in the low register, when he goes down and you just hear him beneath Norma Winston's voice, he's adding more body to the sound without necessarily being heard. And I think that's a very, very important skill for any musician, to kind of be present without being conspicuous, as it were.
Well, the first track you've chosen is the title track, Somewhere Called Home. And what are we looking out for here?
We're looking out for the doubling of the piano and clarinet lines in various places. We're looking out for this very beautiful, piercing sound that Norma has in her voice. We're looking out for this this wonderful kind of mixture of high and low register sounds as well that Tony achieves on the clarinet, how he can rise up to the upper register, then come down to that low, gurgling, sort of burbling sound, which just gives you some added bass without necessarily overpowering the whole mix.
Pay particular attention to where the music becomes speedier for the clarinet solo, to up the energy there. And this is from Norma Winston's album Somewhere Called Home, the title track, Somewhere Called Home. Thank you.
to curse a new day.
The sound of Norma Winston from her album Somewhere Called Home, and that was the title track featuring John Taylor on the piano and our new octogenarian Tony Coe on the clarinet.
It's funny, as we were listening to that, we were talking about that wonderful combination of piano and clarinet when they're playing the same line. It reminded me a little bit, Julian, of the Jitterbug Waltz.
Oh yeah
by Fats Waller. That's and right. I suppose Fats Waller reinvented by Eric Dolphy,
yeah,
which is the other little reference that you kind of hear in here. You know, we don't think about Eric Dolphy's clarinet playing that much, more his bass clarinet playing, but his clarinet playing is beautiful. Mm. And there's something about the kind of playfulness of that line, and there's a playfulness throughout the album as well, which is very beautiful.
It's the intervallic relationship coming down the scale, yeah. Is reminiscent of Jitterbug Waltz, absolutely. And I think it's always interesting how you can reanimate a piece of music, or you can bring a new environment to it to bring out something else,
another context.
And certainly with these three musicians, everybody comes to the fore, and nothing feels missed or underrepresented, because everything is very subtle.
Yeah, there's a great balance to the record. The other kind of reference as well, just to put things into a wider context, which I think is important, is Return to Forever. You know, the very early records that Chick Corea, Flora Purim and Joe Farrell made together. You know, that relationship that those three musicians had, and how you hear the relationship that these three musicians have as well. Something which is poetic, which is ethereal, which is quite mysterious. That very first Return to Forever record, which I believe was on ECM as well, just seems to be kind of drifting in the background here.
Yeah, I think the subtle expressions of the music are definitely going to remind one of each other. But the next piece that you chose is called High Lily Low. And tell us why this is particularly interesting for you.
Well, the intro with Tony Coe's clarinet, I think, is really stunning. These long, piercing tones that he has, where you really feel the kind of the body in the instrument, that sets up this very, very nice kind of, again, very subtle, very intimate story that's told throughout the song. And the way that he basically makes that statement right at the beginning pushes the timbre at about 24, 25 seconds, so you get that, it's almost like a bird-like cry, which is very expressive, and then withdraws, again, with everything's done with subtlety. Again, they're showing you something which has a lot of colour without splashing all of the colour all over the place in a vulgar way. So Norma's singing with Tony almost underneath, almost like the breath from her voice and the breath from the clarinet becoming one. I think that's how I hear it. It's like these two instruments eliding in a very powerful way.
Is a sad song. Hi, Lily, hi, Lily, hi, lo. A song of love is a song of woe. Don't ask me how. Is a sad song, for I have loved, and it's so
Hi Lily Low from Norma Winston's album Somewhere Called Home. Such a quality voice Norma has, and the effectiveness of that particular track, just the patience of it all.
There's nothing hurried or frenetic about this record at all. It's something that you listen to and you just let it flow into your mind, flow into your ears, and there are moments when they do push, as it were, when we've been talking about how expressive the instruments can be, but they're never overpowering. You know, it's like they're holding butterflies in their hands, if that's an expression that you can use. It's just the delicacy of it all.
It is very delicate. And the next piece we're going to hear is called Out of This World. It's by Harold Arlen and Johnny Mercer. A standard, a great standard. And they really achieve this otherworldliness in this interpretation. There's a very disciplined piano figure and a much freer approach in the clarinet, intertwined in the vocal melody. The clarinet comes out at the bridge of the piece. And so their use of texture is really astounding.
I love the way towards the beginning that the piano and the clarinet, they entwine to create this falling raindrops effect. It's like the two of them are just sprinkling the notes into life, and it gives you that sensation of something which is ethereal, something which is out of this world, as it were, to quote the title, something which is just a little bit different, a little bit strange. And that feeling of a world which is imagined, a world which is not entirely real, that's completely captured by the way that the voice, piano and clarinet work together.
Norma solos over the piano figure, and then there's an absolutely, if we haven't heard the virtuosic sensibility that Tony Coe has, we certainly do hear it here. He plays a wonderful solo. And I think it's great how Norma, in a sense, creeps back in. She doesn't sort of make this big statement of melody. She creeps the melody back into conclusion without them then going to the bridge at the end.
Well, part of the magic of the record is the fact that they're segueing in and out of each other's voices at strategic points, that the solos aren't telegraphed. It's like, okay, here's a big Norma moment or here's a big Tony moment. It's that you have the piano rippling underneath the voice and the clarinet sometimes, and then you have the clarinet just like working with lots of finesse under the voice. I love his solo in the middle here, because we talked about Dolphy before, that kind of very, very expressive, very experimental side that Dolphy has comes out in the way that he's bending pitch. He's playing these busy phrases at times, but again, keeping everything very controlled.
Kevin, thank you so much for coming and sharing your enthusiasm for this wonderful record, Somewhere Called Home by Norma Winston, featuring John Taylor and, of course, Tony Coe. It's been great.
My pleasure.
This is Out of This World.
Effervescent sound of Tony Coe, who celebrates his 80th birthday today. Well, that's almost the end of this week's jazz lineup, but there's plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Geoffrey Smith's Jazz tonight at midnight and Jazz on 3 on Monday night with Jez Nelson. And on next week's jazz lineup, concert music from saxophonist Joshua Redman and an interview with author Richard Havers, who celebrates the release of his new book on Blue Note Records. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
And Jazz Lineup was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. For more information on Jazz Lineup, just go to the programme page via the Radio 3 website. And Jazz Lineup will be back next Saturday at the usual time of 6 p.m. BBC Radio 3, it's 10 to 7. Time now for Opera on 3, live from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. It's presented by Ivan Hewitt.
Hello and welcome. We are indeed live at the Royal Opera House for a performance of L'Elisir d'Amore, the Elixir of Love, an opera in two acts by Gaetano Donizetti with a libretto by Felice Romani. We're seeing it in the production by Laurent Pelli, which was first unveiled here at Covent Garden in 2007 in a co-production with the Opéra National de Paris. The role of Adina, the flirtatious farm owner, is taken by the soprano Lucy Crowe, who's making her role debut here at Covent Garden. Nemorino, the charmingly dim-witted farmhand who loves Adina, is played by the tenor Vittorio Grigolo. Belcore, the swaggering army sergeant, is sung by the baritone Levente Molnar. And the farmhand Gianetta by the soprano Chiandra Howarth. Tonight's conductor is Daniele Rustioni, and the chorus master is Renato Balsadonna. The quack doctor, Dulcamara, is played by bass baritone Bryn Tervell.
I've sang Dulcamara once in the opera in Amsterdam. But, you know, I have seen this production a couple of times, really enjoyed it myself. I look forward to coming back to sing it here. This is wonderful to have some fun on the stage, especially from one who sings Wagner a lot, and to watch these wonderful young singers who are in the beginning of their careers. And I can sit back as the older generation now, enjoying the fruits of my labour. You know, I've had my career.
Well, there wasn't much sitting back from Bryn Tervell, I can assure you. If you'd like to read a synopsis and see photographs of the production and that cast, take a look at the Radio 3 website. Just go to bbc.co.uk/Radio 3 and follow the links to Opera on 3. Well, this performance will start in about 10 minutes' time. And here in the BBC box with me is Francesco Izzo, who's an associate professor at the University of Southampton's music department. And he's also the author of Laughter Between Two Revolutions, Opera Buffa in Italy, 1831 to 1848. Francesco, welcome. Thank you very much indeed for joining me this evening. Now, we're going to be talking at some length in a moment, but just tell me, just before we get into the production itself, tell me where this piece sits in your personal list of favourites.
Oh, very, very high. You know, I love many operas, and I'm glad I don't have to rank them, and I don't have to give up any of them, but L'Elisir d'Amore is one of two that always make me laugh and that always bring tears to my eyes. So if I'm going to a desert island, L'Elisir is coming with me.
Oh, well, we're in for a good evening then. Excellent. Thank you, Francesco. I'll be coming back to you a bit later. Now, everyone agrees that this production has a lot of period charm, but in this staging, it's not the early 19th century period charm we might expect in this opera. It's the mid-20th century charm of early Fellini films. We see the Italy of Vespers and wide-skirted floral print dresses and ice cream bars. When the curtain rises on Act One, it's immediately clear it's harvest time. Lounging in a summer frock and sunglasses, halfway up a giant pile of straw bales is Adina, the farm owner. She's protected by a parasol and reading a book. Watching her at a distance is the lovesick farm worker Nemorino, who, as tenor Vittorio Grigolo explains, has some way to go before he can persuade Adina to take him seriously. He's really well out of her league.
Nemorino doesn't even know what kind of character he has. That's why I like him. I usually don't do this kind of repertoire and character. I'm more into heroic and loving, dramatic roles, but I really like Nemorino because he's trying to discover himself. The only things he knows about him is that he felt something very deep for this girl. So it's like a baby, you know, he's attracted to everything and everything shines. I think that's why I like Nemorino, because we should all the time keep a little bit of a Nemorino inside of our life. It's a growing character during the play. The fact that this military guy, Belcore, arrives into this village, it's perhaps the reason that let Nemorino understand his deep feelings, you know what I mean? Like, without Belcore, Nemorino will never get a chance to go close to Adina.
And frankly, Adina doesn't really want him to, even though at some level she quite enjoys Nemorino's dog-like devotion. She's clearly got intellectual pretensions, because as she lounges on her haystack, she's reading The Legend of Tristan and Isolde. The idea of a love potion that can prompt undying ardour she thinks is ridiculous, but she can't resist reading the story to her workers, who in turn are very keen to listen. A fanfare then announces the arrival of some soldiers, led by the local army sergeant Belcore. In this production, they are a real ragtag bunch. One of them's tall and thin, another...